Hi, and welcome back to the Plan Court Perspective. We're kicking off our second episode, and I'm here with Chris Kirkhoff today. We're going to jump right in. Chris, my question for you today, the news has kind of softened on we're going into a deep, dark recession. We're hearing still there's some talk about inflation. Still there's some talk that the economy's not great. The war continues in Ukraine, but the markets seem to be going up, doing fine. Does that surprise you? What does that trigger in your mind?
I think it's definitely the talk of the day, Rainey. So great place to start the conversation. And the reality is, for most of my career, some of the biggest and strongest moves in the market to the upside have been during periods where news has been generally pretty bad and gloomy. And by the way, the last month that we've had not only marked a big uptick on top of a positive fourth quarter for the U.S. markets, we've seen very strong returns in foreign markets as well. So year to date, in fact, the MSCI EAFE is up over 8%, with the S&P up just a little over 6%. So foreign markets are actually doing even better, as you said, with a war in Europe and a number of other factors that are kind of ancillary issues that Europe is dealing with, you know, constricted energy access and things kind of as an add-on to the war in Ukraine. So it's in some respects shocking to see the news continue to get worse. It seems like just about every week we hear several more companies with thousands of layoffs happening. The war in Ukraine continues to rage on, and obviously that's very negative news. And yet the market, as you said, continues to climb this proverbial wall of worry, as we say. But it is worth noting that's not historically unusual. It's just a bit different for many people as you're living through it. And I think the key there is the market is always looking ahead, right? It has already digested what's going on. The war in Ukraine has been priced in, at least as it currently exists, and the current track it's on. For better or for worse, we've priced in, as you said, there's been a lot of doom and gloom in the conversation. So I think a lot of people are anticipating some form of recession. And of course, higher interest rates, that's really the question of the day is how much further is the Fed going to go? How quickly are they going to go? And what is inflation's curve going to look like from here? We saw a significant dampening of inflation in the fourth quarter. So if you annualize the last 3 months of the inflation prints, it's actually pretty tame. But the question is that going to hold, or are we going to get back into this trend, especially as spring is here or coming soon? We all hope it's coming soon. And you know, the summer months oftentimes bring some higher inflationary pressures with it.
So we talked about inflation the last time, and what really sits on my mind is if I'm retired and I'm needing to increase my spend because of inflation, what does that look like for my portfolio and what should I be scared of?
Rainey, that question is really one of the main drivers behind some of the changes we made in the fixed income portion of clients' portfolios last year. So one of the things I was most excited about with those changes is we had the opportunity to start being much more customized in the bond solution, depending on how aggressive or conservative a client's portfolio is. Because as you said, if a client is conservative and has, let's say, 65, 70% of their assets in bonds, they need to also have some inflation protection in there. Long-range inflation protection, from our standpoint, continues to be an investment in stocks. That's your best long-term protection against inflation eroding your purchasing power from your portfolio. But in the near term, say the next year or two, you really need some portion of that fixed income portfolio that has some inflation protection against it. So being able to add that component for more moderate and conservative portfolios was a big component of the changes that we made last year. And realizing that for clients on the other end of the spectrum, the more aggressive clients with 70, 80% of their portfolio in the stock market, the truth of that portfolio is the volatility is largely determined, at least dominated, by the moves of the stock market. So we could reconfigure the bond portfolio to maybe stretch a little bit more into some different credit parts of the credit market and maybe just a little bit further on duration to take advantage of the fact that we finally have kind of observable yields, which we hadn't had for years.
So as interest rates go up, we're also seeing mortgage rates go up. And for our clients who were otherwise thinking about buying a new home, what should they be considering right now with those higher rates?
Well, it's a very interesting question as we sit here in February, because the answer is in some ways different than it was even at the end of the year. Bonds in the month of January have receded in terms of the interest rates. So I've actually seen mortgage rates come down a little bit from their higher watermarks in this cycle, but still significantly above where they were about a year ago or so. So I think the reality is the decision to buy a house should be based on your needs and in some cases what you'd like to do. And how you finance that is for our clients a very individualized conversation, whether or not you borrow as much as you can, or you pay cash, you liquidate part of the portfolio. All those things are on the table that we got to look at. I think on the selling side, that's kind of the more interesting thing is if you are looking to sell your house and move into your next house, the market just doesn't have a lot of inventory out there. So despite the fact that interest rates have gone up significantly, normally you would expect price pressures to happen in the marketplace. In a number of places, especially on the coast, we've seen that start. But in the middle of the country here, prices have kind of maintained for the most part. And we've just seen fewer and fewer people actually put their houses on the market. So it's a long-winded way of saying, if you're going to sell, like, know where you're going to go next, because the days of selling and then figuring out where you're going next, you know, if you go down that road today, you may have a hard time finding that next house.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think of mortgage rates, I always think of taxes and tax deductibility. So we're jumping right into tax day. It's going to be April 18th this year, given the holiday in DC on the 15th. So we have the weekend. They're letting the CPAs work one more weekend to get your taxes filed this year. How kind. The IRS has actually hired 5,000 new employees for customer service, although they still predict the phones will be quite congested, even with those 5,000. I wanted to point out a few things for our clients to be aware of this tax filing season. We've got estimated tax payments for our business owners that happen quarterly, just like they always have. But for our filers who are retired or employed and receiving those W-2s, everything should look pretty much the same as it has in years past, other than the fact that if you have young children, so under age 17, the child tax credit and the dependent care credit are noticeably reduced in the current year. So if in 2021 you got a pretty decent refund because those are refundable credits, that might not be what happens this year. So we've taken the child tax credit back down to $2,000. The dependent care credit, which was last year up to $16,000, and as somebody who still pays for daycare, that was pretty important to me, that's gone back down to $3,000 per child, $6,000 for multiple children. So, and it doesn't go per child. If you have three or four children, $6,000 is still the limit. So those are some credit reductions that parents are going to notice. Otherwise, it really goes to those working in the gig economy might see something different this year and next. Form 1099-K was usually issued for credit card transactions only over $20,000. The IRS reduced that to require those forms for $600 and over. They did delay it to the 2023 season, but companies were preparing for that. So there's a good chance that you're going to receive one of those 1099-Ks if you have an online business or you work in the gig economy in any way, shape, or form. So I think the big thing to call out right now, here we sit February 1st, if your CPA has retired or if you're looking to make a change, now is the time to look for a new CPA. So reaching out to your wealth manager at PlanCorp is a very good idea sooner rather than later so that we can get you set up with the right CPA to get your returns timely filed. And if those CPAs become too busy over the next few weeks, there's always that extension option. But I always remind clients that's not an extension to pay. It's an extension to file, but we still have to make sure we make all the right payments on time. So working with your wealth manager to do a projection in that case is a really smart idea.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. If people are looking to make that move, they need to move quickly because we're really hitting the peak time for CPAs coming up here over the next few months. One other important point to note is there's now 22 states who've come out with legislation to try and offset the salt cap legislation that went into law several years ago. So definitely, if you are someone who is a business owner, or you do consulting through an LLC or a gig economy worker who maybe has a self-employment LLC that you've set up or S-Corp, talk to your CPA or tax preparer about whether or not your state, Missouri being one that just passed it late in 22, but there are some potential advantages to be had there with proper tax planning by paying those state taxes. Usually through the corporation is how most states are handling that, so you get a better benefit of those taxes. So Rainey, what else is going on at PlanCorp and in the industry that we had to talk about? I know something that's been out there for some time, but has kind of been slow moving, understandably given the size, is the Schwab and TD merger.
Yeah, in my mind, Chris, that's what we're going to jump into right after tax day. So we're going to be focused on our clients' tax returns and payments due in the first quarter. And then right after that, we're going to make a quick pivot. We're already working with Schwab and TD. A lot of our clients have been custodied at TD for a very long time. And so as we've seen this merger move forward, we've seen a lot of changes to their processes. We've worked really closely with the Schwab team to make sure that our clients can have a very smooth transition experience. Our team has had great success in doing that. We will see, we think right now, we'll see over Labor Day and Labor Day weekend, those accounts will transition. At this time, they assure us it's going to be paperless and our clients won't have to sign forms. And that's what we're looking forward to. But account numbers will change. So those of our clients who have accounts that they utilize the checking function on might have some changes come through there. We hope it goes smoothly. They are beginning some small transitions, actually starting in February. So I'm hoping that by the time we get to Labor Day, we've had some good test cases and they've worked out the kinks. But I can assure all of our clients that we will be here and working through that transition.
So speaking of a company that's not going through massive changes in that regard, this is PlanCorp's 40th anniversary of its founding back in 1983. So, you know, we continue to grow as a company, Rainey, and I know we've got some new hires that we'd love to announce today. So you want to walk us through who we've brought on board here in the last month or two?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the successes I think we've had at PlanCorp in the last few years, I'm going to include myself in this, is hiring what I call recovering CPAs who have a really strong tax background, but a passion for financial planning. And so we've had a few really good folks join our firm. I would call out Kevin Daniel, who's joined us as a senior wealth manager, Mike Dempsey, who's joined us as a wealth manager, and Emily Hammond, who's also joined us as a wealth manager. Those are some folks that really bring a strong tax background to the team. Another thing I'm really excited about is that we're going to pilot a diversity and equity internship this summer. So Amy Jones, our chief talent officer, is working hard on really focusing on what we're doing in the industry to ensure that we have continued diversity and sustainability.
Yeah, that's great. And I think everything you're speaking to reinforces that PlanCorp that spirit of collaboration that's been really critical to our growth over the years. And as we think about growth here, you know, I was talking the other day to a client about the fact that from our perspective, one of the greatest benefits of being a private company is we don't have, you know, quarterly earnings calls and give earnings estimates and have to be held to some specific growth target. Our only reason for growing is to continue to attract and retain the best people we can, because that's what's going to ensure we can continue to provide the excellent client service, client care, and client advice that we've become known for over these last 40 years. And so to me, it's just one continuous loop, right? Where we're focused on the client experience, and making sure we're giving them the best advice possible and the best service possible, being their financial life advocate. And in order to do that, we have to have great people, the best people we can find. And growth allows us to do that, allows us to attract those people and provide them the opportunity to to grow a career here and stay here for the long term.
Absolutely. I love that team approach at PlanCorp. It's one of the reasons I'm here and will stay here for the rest of my career. I think there are very few ways in which I would compare your financial planner to your doctor, but one of those ways is that you want somebody that's young. You want somebody younger than you who's really staying abreast of all the new technical knowledge that's out there and bringing the right things to the table. What I love about what we do at PlanCorp is we bring both sides. We bring experience and youth to the table and allow our clients to experience that mix. And we're constantly training and growing our team.
Yeah. Maybe one other way is the fiduciary view. I would add that one that, you know, it's always nice to have someone who's looking out for your best interest. So not coming out with something that could work, but really is the best solution we can bring to the table. With that, I think we're going to wrap up on this month's edition of the PlanCorp Perspective. We appreciate you joining us, and please check out the website for more details and some more great blog posts and content throughout the month. And we look forward to talking to you in March.
Thank you for listening to the PlanCorp Perspective. For important disclosures, please visit plancorp.com/perspective. We'll see you next month.